perfect. Bang on my chest if you think I'm perfect.
Go ahead, bang on it.
No heart?
You gotta have heart. Miles and miles of heart.
This is Patchwork Heart Ministries' Young Catholics Respond, brought to you by Breadbox Media. Now, here's your host, Bill Snyder.
Thanks, Adam, and welcome to the program, everybody. This is Young Catholics Respond. I am Bill Snyder. And thanks so much for joining me today, no matter where you're listening. I want to encourage you to reach out to us on social media and our website. Visit us on Facebook and Twitter. And also reach out to us on our website, patchworkheart.org. And also remember we're on Patreon too, always looking for subscribers to help us continue our mission here, our nonprofit mission, to sow hope into broken hearts. And we do that each and every week on this radio program, Young Catholics Respond. It's a way for us to help young people live their Catholic faith boldly and also get to know a little bit more about the truth through personal stories and witnesses, authors, and books and whatnot. And today I have an amazing guest, Hudson Biblo, who is a person who loves his Catholic faith despite same-sex attractions and transgender inclinations, both being a part of his story. He has discovered this amazing love of Jesus Christ, most specifically within the Catholic Church, the last place that the world said he should ever look. Today, he joyfully pursues a heart of chastity and hopes that the whole world will come to know this amazing freedom. Welcome, Hudson, to the program, and thank you so much for joining me and talking with me about your courageous story.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so as I said, this is a courageous story because it bucks right up against the world and the way the world is celebrating this new gender identity and sexual freedom. It's vastly different than what the Catholic Church teaches, but I want to hear your story first because I truly believe that stories change the world, and I believe yours can. So just tell us your story and your journey.
All right. Thanks so much. God be praised. I never thought I'd ever end up in the Catholic Church because the way the world was always saying, like, the Catholic Church hates you. The Catholic Church was the bad guy, right? And I mean, I came from a Catholic family, and I wandered away into some other wacky stuff in my early 20s and whatnot. So I had the core of Catholicism taught to me and taught to me pretty decently. Like, it had enough of a grip on me that I always had it in the back of my mind, even though it was like the last place that I wanted to go either. So when the world was saying that the church hates you, it was very easy for me to accept that, right? Because it gave me a false sense of freedom that I could go out and be who God knit me to be, as some people might say. So it really took a miraculous intervention for me to come home, and here's how that turned out. So I moved up from college to a far northern town in my mid-20s. So at this time, I was pretty lost. I had already been using like pornography for, gosh, 18 years. And oh my goodness, the first time I ever came out to myself was after using porn. I was using for 2 years when I was 11 years old, and I wasn't getting turned on by the girls on the page anymore. So I thought it must mean I was gay, right? Because an 11-year-old, what are they going to think about? So I went up north and I had these thoughts in my head, like wondering about myself, questioning myself. And I actually came out to myself a second and a third time, and I'll explain those in a bit. And I was like so sick of running from who I am, right? Because the world says self-honesty, like you need to be honest with yourself. And so I was, after using porn, like, you know, same sex and transgender, like, you know, male porn and stuff, I was like, I can't run. So I did come out to myself a third time, and I went to church, and there I was. There were seven people around. I didn't know what to expect. But it turns out that at that very Mass, the pastor there actually insinuated that there was more for us to know about homosexuality. And I was like, ding, like I'd never heard that before from anyone before. Up to then, I just accepted what the world told me, right? So I wanted to not come out publicly. And because I didn't want to come out publicly, I was looking for any ways to delay it. So when I heard that there was more for us to learn, that was like a window of hope. Because, I mean, I remember when I came out to myself the third time, I felt the despair of feeling like I'd never be a father. And the fear of, oh, I'd have to tell my family. And I went home and I read everything I possibly could. And I basically came to the conclusion that there's way more than what I thought I knew. what I noticed really quickly that it just seemed that everybody online had an opinion about it. And I also realized that everybody was asserting that their opinion was truth. But I had been running around living a lie my whole life in many number of ways, especially with unchaste relationships with women trying to prove I was straight. And I was just living a lie. And the last thing I was going to do was accept someone else's perspective as truth if it was just contradicted by someone else's perspective. So I wanted truth, and I launched into this journey towards greater truth. And this whole topic of LGBTQ for me falls under a bigger umbrella of the greater pursuit of truth in general. Shortly after that, there's two other people that I encountered, and one of them was a doctor who mentioned to me that the attractions that we experience are influenced by our life experience and what we were exposed to. So what the words I would use today is that I learned that the particular attractions that I experience, the particular ones, not just the general ones, the particular attractions are influenced by the story of my life. And I mean, it makes sense for me. Like, attractions are just one form of desire, and desires change. Like, I remember when I was little, I had a slug back a cup of coffee, right? And it was cold grounds. I thought it was Coca-Cola, but it was just disgustingly cold grounds. And I know that I have had zero appetite for coffee. I know that I was sexually molested when I was a teenager, and I know that that really influenced my desire to be around certain types of people, namely men. Of course, after that, I had like massive trust issues, and I don't think that really helped for me to like find my way, right? So I know that desires for like food or even for relationships were deeply influenced by things that I encountered in my life. And so, yeah, this professional, she mentioned this, and it was like an eye-opener. So that would have been in 2008, actually. So then in 2009, I actually was at a conference, and I was sitting in the room full of a bunch of teachers, and there was this gay activist talking, and he went on and on and on about gay kids and stuff in school and how to, and I mean, I can sense the charity inside his talking, but one thing I asked him afterwards was, hey, everything, I mean, you just led on to 120 teachers or so that people are born this way, and that's the end of the conversation. And I'm like, but everything I had read up to that point doesn't point to that. So, you know, what are your thoughts? And he said to me, and this is a quote, it just burned into my heart immediately, environment plays a factor in the development of our attractions. That's what he said. Now, when a gay activist tells you that stuff, you don't just like forget that or throw it out. You think about it, right? I don't know if he was referring to what some people believe are latent attractions, meaning like a kid is born with it and then they develop into it, like they begin to flourish, or whether he believed that environment would influence us. And so I took it as the latter. I wasn't thinking about latent attractions. I took it to say, wait a second, my environment matters. Maybe there's something about my environment that I can look at. And so it really sent me down this journey of self-discovery and self-reflection, where I found out kind of like, how did I get to where I was? I am so happy that this activist pretty much invited me to challenge my sense of self-concept and identity, inadvertently, of course. But who better to do it than a gay activist? I love that part. So I went and I just reflected on life. And there was over years of praying and thinking about these things, there was a few things that always bubbled up to the surface. And I'll go through them really quick, some of them anyway. The first thing was that in being second born to an older brother who I love greatly, and we played lots and everything, but I learned how to be second place because we'd play together all the time. And I became comforted in the second place or feeling that that's where I belong. But as an after effect of that, I realized that I don't feel comfortable as someone who wins. And because we played boy stuff, like, you know, whatever, you know, we just played stuff. But because I associated with my brother, I saw it as boy things. I saw myself as not winning at boy things. I saw myself as being a failure as a boy, in a sense. And then so doing boy things that I used to do, after a while of like losing and getting beaten down enough, I just like, you know, from the losses and the self-confidence, I began to distance myself from those things because all they were a reminder of feeling not good enough as a boy. So that, I know that contributed to things like what would have been my transgender pursuits later on. Another thing is that because I was exposed to porn at age 9, I know that I was compulsively pursuing that. And that drew me to isolation, and isolation drew me to be able to relate to the other boys less. So I was relating to the other boys less. I was having questions about my own sexuality, and I struggled to make friends on top of that. So I remember by grade six, the other boys were starting to move from going from the seeking of the friendship with the boys to seeking the approval of the girls. I was still seeking the approval of the boys. And I felt like I never got that for years and years and years until years after. But because I sensed that I lacked that approval from the boys, I was always trying to do what I could do to make them happy with me and trying to almost like woo them, but as friends. But then also at that age, that's when we started waking up to the idea of, you know, maybe it's nice to have someone else, like a special girlfriend or a special, you know, special friend like that. And so I began to wonder, well, maybe if I don't belong to the boys, like in the wolf pack, so to speak, maybe I'm supposed to belong to them like as a boyfriend. And then, of course, these thoughts just got fostered and fostered over time. And then things became sexualized, but I didn't sexually act out with any boys, but I just became like sexually active with women. I was trying to run from the question of being gay because, I mean, it didn't have the same accolades as it does today in our culture. I didn't want it then. So I acted out unchastely with women to assert that I was straight. And I hurt a lot of people along the way, I'm sorry to say. But that just accelerated with the beginning of online porn, and then that's when things got crazy. I remember, I ended up looking at gay porn just to, like, see if I was gay. I'm like, well, you know, if I'm gay, then I'll like this stuff, right? And it turns out I couldn't look away. I was just totally hooked. A part of me was shocked. Part of me was disgusted. I'm thinking, why am I looking at this stuff? But I couldn't look away. But I just concluded that, oh, I guess this means I'm gay. I guess that means I better run even more, you know? And so I lived this life of running. And it took me a long time to depart from that. I mean, and then getting sexually molested by a man along the way there in my teens didn't help. And it just launched me even further down that running. I had all this running, and it wasn't until I encountered actually a good group of solid Catholic men up north. That's when the running began to stop. Because you know what? They showed me a love that I craved. They had a peace and joy in their hearts that I absolutely craved. And I'm like, I want this. What these guys have, I need this. Because I was living this delusion that the world basically piped into me saying, the only way you're going to be happy is if you pursue, you know, pleasures of the flesh, so to speak. It wasn't joyful at all. It was miserable. Even though, of course, things felt good when you're experimenting, when you're, you know, engaged sexually, but physically, your soul is dying a little bit each time. And for me, it was escapism from self. So these guys, man, these are people just like you, you know, the people in your church, the people who reach out and extend a warm, welcoming hand because they're there instead of watching football at home. Like, these are just the people who are physically present. They welcomed me and just took me right there where I was. I didn't tell them everything, but they walked with me and they just showed me that there was such a thing as peace. There was such a thing as joy. And I mean, life had never been the same ever since. It was awesome.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. I want to hear that conversion or those moments of conversion through their mentoring when we return from the break, Hudson. We have to take that short break here. And when we come back, I want to hear that. And I want to talk with you a little bit about some of the questions that people might have for you because you've gone totally countercultural with this. So I definitely want to talk with you more about how we can help as Catholic men, as Catholic people, you know, good faithful Catholics, lead other people back to the truth of the church. So right back after these messages here on Young Catholics Respond, I'm Bill Snyder.
Patchwork Heart Ministry is committed to sowing hope into broken hearts by helping young people encounter the love of Jesus Christ and His Catholic Church through prayer, storytelling, and media initiatives. We invite you to prayerfully consider supporting this mission financially. Mail your tax-deductible donation to Patchwork Heart Ministry at P.O. Box 563, Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, zip code 53147. Or visit patchworkheart.org to donate online. That's Patchwork Heart Ministry, P.O. Box 563, Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, 53147, or online at patchworkheart.org. St. Therese of Lisieux's Little Way of the Cross, written by Victoria Clarizo and designed by Just Love Prince, is a beautiful prayer booklet that helps you pray the Stations of the Cross. Use these reflections to meditate on the great love and mercy that Jesus had for us as he journeyed to Calvary. The Little Way of the Cross includes gems from Scripture, the writings of St. Therese, and the words of Jesus from the imagination and prayer of the author. Go to justloveprince.com to get your copy today.
Our Blessed Mother wants only the best for her children and has given us a special place where she promises to help all those who appeal to her motherly love and protection. Telling Saint Juan Diego that here I will alleviate the sufferings of all those who love me and seek my protection. That holy place is now the site of the beautiful Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Mexico City. If you would like to learn more about how you can visit this special place of grace, please visit vivaguadalupe.org for more information. Our Lady may be calling you now.
Your heart is always beating, but you never have to think about it.
Welcome back to Young Catholics Respond. Once again, Bill Snyder.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to this episode of Young Catholics Respond. I'm Bill Snyder, and on today's episode, we are having a fascinating conversation with Hudson Biblo, and he is a person who is just telling an amazing witness story, amazing journey about same-sex attraction and his journey through it to the truth of the Catholic Church. And Hudson, right before the break, you kind of left us off with that cliffhanger about how you came back to the church through a group of really solid Catholic men and found that truth. So just finish off the rest of that story for us, if you would.
Sure thing. Well, I encountered this amazing group of guys. And like looking back on it now, I can see things more clearly on like what really transpired. And the first thing that transpired is that I actually grew in friendship with other men. See, it had been 12, 13 years since I had even gotten close to another man after being sexually molested by a man. So I realized that that's not healthy. Like, I should be okay with being able to talk to other men or be around other men or grow in relationship with other men and even hug other men. That should be okay. If that's not happening or I'm scared of that, then that's a problem inside me and I have to check that out. So these guys showed me authentic friendship and holy friendship. And that was so foundational. Like I said, I struggled to make friends from the very beginning in my memory, although I did have a couple of really solid friends. But just in general, meeting new people and having healthy friendships and relationships wasn't the best, but they really, really became difficult after being molested. Actually, I encountered this group of guys just after I got introduced to Facebook. And I remember someone telling me that, hey, man, look at your Facebook friends list. There's nothing but girls. And I went and looked. You know, at first I thought it was because I was, a ladies man. But then I looked and I said, oh my gosh, they are almost all girls. In fact, the only men on my Facebook list are people that I met before the incident of being molested. There was a couple. Other than that, there was nobody else. And I realized I was incapable of making healthy relationships with men. So these guys helped me melt that away. I mean, they helped. How about this? God worked through them to help restore my heart and recover from some of the serious relational wounds that I had that I didn't even know I had at the time, of course. The second thing is these guys modeled a prayer life. I remember praying the rosary a couple times when I was little with the family, and I'd long since forgotten that. And they reintroduced me to the rosary at regular rosary groups and Bible study meetings and whatnot. And I also got to attend a Curcio retreat in which I actually, for the very first time, uttered a word about the pain on my heart. And let me tell you, I needed to do that. And I did it because someone shared about their heart first. And that just goes to show the power of sharing, right? Sharing begets sharing. And my life has changed forever because of that. So people modeled prayer and sharing. And for me, I see now that I was a trauma survivor. Sharing is absolutely necessary in a person's journey to recover from trauma. And actually, I wonder how much the degree of the transgender pursuit for me, because I know I was trying to escape being a boy. That's the boiled down version of it. But how much of that was also me trying to escape from facing the trauma that I had experienced. And I can see that it is connected, because when I was like living in trauma, and I've been training on trauma and trauma response in ways for the last couple of years, and I see that basically I had built this wall around myself, this little kingdom castle of reality, and anything that shook that reality, I would lash out against. That's what I did in my trauma. And that's what a lot of people do when they're traumatized, is that they build this concept of reality. And if you challenge that concept of reality, what you're doing is you're causing that person to become that much closer to having to face the pain of addressing the wounds of trauma. And so I lived that. And I can understand that, yeah, the transgender pursuit for me in some ways was a manifestation of me trying to continue to have that castle of reality built around myself. And it was a false reality. In fact, I remember when I started cross-dressing as a teenager, I remember at the beginning, I was like, oh, this is interesting. I was curious. And then it felt really good. But then very shortly after that, it became a matter of feeling the tightness of the clothes as a substitute for the real hug that I really craved, because I felt so low and unloved. I felt so unloved, and I would get a hug from these tight clothes. Meanwhile, our world just supports that as this is like something amazing. But like I was a real hurting child underneath there, a real hurting child. So these guys, they showed me friendship. They showed me a desire for healthy relationship. And you know what? They were basically the lived example of why I might want to open my heart up to Jesus Christ a little more. That's the biggest thing. They didn't hit me on the head with a Bible and say, you got to do this or that. They just were who I wanted to be in terms of the peace and the life they lived, you know, and the stability. And they talked about Jesus with a confidence and a love that I had really never really heard much before. I mean, I grew up in Catholic schools, and I mean, Jesus was like a nice guy and kind of, you know, not really presented as anybody I really would want to follow. He was like, I mean, unless I was doing an art project or something, you know, like my Catholic education was not that hot. But these guys presented Jesus as like the true conqueror of death on the cross, like the death and resurrection, you know, and just like as a leader. They presented him as a leader in their lived lives and how they lived out their lives. And the last thing here they really taught me about was that there are such things as virtue and chastity and celibacy and abstinence. I guess I learned through our interaction is that chastity, celibacy, and abstinence are not the same thing. And see, a lot of people would say, you know, hey, you have a lifetime full of celibacy in front of you because you're gay and that's who you are. But through the heart of pursuing a heart of chastity, I mean, when we pursue chastity, that's where there is a transformation of heart, because chastity is in alignment with God's will. And God, when we're aligning with God's will, God can transform our hearts in ways. And it transformed my desires to depart from getting those physical pleasures of the flesh outside of marriage to wanting to retain and uphold and preserve my sexuality for my future wife, my future female wife in my future relationship, should that be the case. And if not, I'll preserve it for the Lord as someone married to the church in a religious order, if that is what I see God is calling me into. And, you know, I'm looking at all those options. But his chastity was the ticket to joy, whereas celibacy was the idea that, oh, you got to white knuckle it through life. You have to like suppress your behavior and suppress who you are. What a miserable way to think about life, right? And I mean, for as long as I was thinking about celibacy as my destiny, I couldn't see chastity as my ticket to freedom. But that's exactly what happened, is I was able to depart from celibacy and look at chastity and realize that celibacy in the single state is an after effect of pursuing chastity. And man, I've never had more joy in my life than actually pursuing chastity. And it's like, come on, world, how come you don't know this? I guess we have to be the living example, and I'm trying. I failed, but I'm trying, you know. I guess that's what counts.
No, exactly. And that I think is such an amazing thing when you share with us all of that about yourself, and knowing that it is possible to pursue holiness, pursue chastity, and everything else kind of follows. I think one of the big things that our society talks about when they talk about those who have same-sex attraction is just about how the rest of the Christian community hates gay people, transsexual people. And as a straight guy, you know, I can't stand being called a bigot and the fact that I hate others based on one aspect of their personality, based on one piece. Do you find that happening? And do you find like that the trend of the world is to just make everyone who doesn't believe this social script that same-sex attraction, you know, people who struggle with that or are normal, like if I don't believe that, then there I am as a bigot. Like, do you find that happening to people, and how do we combat that?
Yeah, I do find that. I've had people who are really invested in the LGBTQ ideology tell me, like, over coffee, because I mean, we do have a chance to visit face to face. Like, I mean, that's important. If we can't sit down and talk with somebody, you know, maybe we could, amen, we could think about what that would look like, right? But I mean, he said, like, anything that falls short of like true, like full endorsement is homophobia. And I'm like, are you serious, man? Like, come on. Some people are allowed to have different thoughts, right? But that's how some people actually think. They think that the only way to be a true Christian is to actually endorse all things LGBTQ, or not even all things, but some things. But some of those things have to do with rejecting the virtue of chastity, and no Christian is called to reject any virtue, let alone the virtue of chastity. You mentioned struggle. I never ever saw myself as struggling with same-sex attractions, but I do see myself struggling with sin. And I mean, I remember struggling with the idea of having lack of self-control, especially with porn and stuff like that. So my struggle was more so to do with chastity, and even more than that, to do with the virtue of temperance, than ever to do with same-sex attractions. I think it's important that we don't assume that people who experience same-sex attractions consider it a struggle. Now, you're talking about the trend of the world and how, you know, it is hard, but it's worth it. Every time I share my story, and I know that it counters the world, I know it counters everything the media presents, and I know that a lot of people look at me like I have, like I'm crazy from another planet, but it's like they've been schooled to believe that this is who you are and everything about it is to be celebrated. But I'll tell you, there's no room left in the conversation for people who find joy in the pursuit of chastity. And if diversity truly was upheld, there would be a diverse stories promoted out there, and that diversity would include the narrative that reveals the joy of chastity. But that, to me, it reveals that the diversity word is just a big lie that our culture uses to kind of push a particular narrative, because true diversity does not exist. It doesn't allow stories from like mine to hit the mainstream. And the last thing there, that the depth of same-sex attractions or any attractions, I understand that this cuts to the core of our being, and it's far more than personality. It's far more than something that people just kind of want to do, because sexuality, I mean, that's part of like the generative aspect of our being. That's not just who we are. That's who we leave to this world if we are thinking through that lens. It's so powerfully important to people that it really just needs to be handled with such love and care, but also with never allowing ourselves to succumb to emotional manipulation. And that, sadly, I see that happening quite a bit. It's like, oh, you don't affirm who I am, therefore I'm going to withdraw letting you see our children, or something tragically hurtful like that. And I've got stories from people who have suffered greatly, not just from somebody who experiences same-sex attractions, but actually what would be so-called allies. Let's say they have family members who have sided with LGBTQ ideology, and they're just, the vitriol that these people subject these practicing Catholics to is so, so hurtful. And that kind of brings me to I think the most important point is, like, you'd expect that the world would, you know, like the LGBTQ community would be mad at me. Well, I don't really experience, you know, there's a bit of frustration because I share the joy of chastity. I want every human being to understand the joy of chastity and the joy of finding the love of Jesus Christ and knowing his love is for them. But the real harshness comes from Catholics who dissent from the church. And the nastiness that I've experienced by the words of some of these people, to me, it reveals that they're just, quite simply put, there's a lot of people in the Catholic Church who don't believe the church is true. And I mean, that was a sad awakening for me. I'm going to pray for them and stuff, but I just want to share my story and just try and get as many hearts to desire to taste the joy like I've tasted.
Yeah, no, it's so beautiful. Hudson, I wish I could give you more time, because this is something that you probably could talk about forever, and we'll have to have you back on the program, because this is just so important to educate people on, to talk about, and really give to people. But so I want to ask you if you know, people wanted to get in touch with you, if there's more resources out there that you can point them toward, that they would be a wonderful thing to do here for them if you can.
Sure. Yeah, I would first and foremost point people to the Courage website, couragerc.org, or I'm sure they can contact me. Maybe if they just sent an email to you and you could just put us in touch, that'd be awesome. Absolutely. I'm happy to talk with whoever wants.
Absolutely. So email info@patchworkheart.org to get in touch with Hudson if this is tugging at your heart. Hudson, I want to thank you so much for your time today. It has been an absolute pleasure talking with you and getting to know your story. And it's a story that will powerfully change a lot of hearts. So thank you so much.
Oh, glory be to God. Thank you so much.
Well, this has been an episode of Young Catholics Respond. Until next time, from all of us here at Patchwork Heart Ministry, I'm Bill Snyder. Keep beating to your Catholic heart.
You've been listening to Young Catholics Respond, a radio initiative of Patchwork Heart Ministry. To learn more about our ministry and program, visit us at patchworkheart.org. Or to get exclusive access and early ministry updates, become our patron on Patreon by searching for Patchwork Heart Ministry.